Alrighty, I think we can start. Very good. How are you guys? Good? Yay. Do you enjoy the conference? Yes, very good. Thanks so much. First of all, thank you so much for coming. It's 4:30. It's afternoon. I bet you are very tired of the whole day. So the first session that I'm going to deliver, just a few words before I introduce myself, it's going to be lighter. And if you want to have the hardcore stuff, it's going to be the next session that I'm delivering at 6 o'clock. So this session is about the hardening, but if you are expecting that you're going to see the top 10 group policy settings that we are about to set up in order to harden our infrastructure, that is not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the broader picture, and we're going to talk about the things that you cannot find in the internet. Yeah, so how, what kind of tips, tricks we can implement in order to make our infrastructure secure. Some of the things you will find, of course, some of the things not necessarily, because I'm going to be talking also about the tools that our team wrote. And who is our team and who am I? Just a couple of words regarding the introduction. So, as you see on the slide, my name is Paula, and my surname indicates that I come somewhere from, as we used to call it in Poland, Central Europe, not Eastern Europe, so that you know. And what I do for a living is security. I'm a penetration tester. I have established a company that is called Secure, and we've got offices, three offices, Dubai, New York, and Warsaw in Poland. And we are, all of our people in the team, we are passionate about security, and as I mentioned, doing the penetration test, that's what I do as well. From the background perspective, why this is me talking about things like this? Well, two reasons. One reason is we constantly think how to make the infrastructures better. And on the other hand, we do have access, I do have access to the source code of Windows. And that's something that gives me a lot of inspiration for different kinds of security things, including for one of the tools that I'm going to be talking about, and that's going to be the last demonstration of this session. We wrote a tool that allows you to play with something that we popularly call cache credentials. I think it's a misunderstanding, because we don't have anything like cache credentials. We've got cached, but these are not really credentials at the end, yeah? So it would be really nice to understand how they work, and eventually should we keep them or maybe not, yes? Because by default we've got 10 of them. So that's what we're gonna be talking about. Just a few words. You will probably notice that I'm a quite a passionate person about security, because security is everywhere. Just to give you the clue. Basically, this guy here, this handsome man here, Mark Krasinovich, he is the person that wrote a book, it's called Windows in Journals. Maybe you know it, maybe you read it. If you didn't, you have to, if you are planning to jump into the security world. Because world without internals, it doesn't exist when, of course, we are discussing security. Yeah, so make sure that you're going to dig in into this book. It's only 1,500 pages, perfect for the Christmas holidays. Yes, which are usually a little bit boring, at least for myself. So you can spend your time on doing that. Okay, very good. So one more thing to mention. You probably wonder why you've got a t-shirt on your chair. Well, that is pretty much because of two reasons. One reason is to mitigate pasty hash in your infrastructure, because pasty hash can be mitigated. It cannot be solved, cannot be patched, but it can be mitigated. The reason why it's like this is because, well, every time we do pen tests, it's boring. I'm bored with my job. I'm serious. Every time we go somewhere, pasty hash just works. Yes, it has been there for years, yes. Eventually, it will be great so that we get rid of that. One of the ways I'm going to show you today, it's actually a very easy way to implement. On the other hand, Windows 10 in enterprise, blah, 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 there is a bunch of requirements, also helps you to mitigate pasty hash, yes. We will not be focusing on pasty hash because you already heard about that on a different presentations, but one tiny bit of that we will need to discuss. And of course, another reason is that I deliver trainings at Cornerstone and Askus in Sweden, and for everybody that gets the t-shirt and you take the photo of yourself and you put it on the Instagram or Twitter, or you just come in and you show it to the guys at the booth, everybody gets 20% discount on all of the classes that we are running in spring. Yeah, so this is the promo that we make. Okay, end of marketing, now the cool stuff. What are we going to talk about? Network-oriented approach, system-oriented approach, and that's something that we kind of like decided to divide it into two parts, because it's going to be a little bit like that. But let's dig in. First of all, tools at the end. Our team, in a whole team's career, we wrote over 200 different kinds of tools. Dig in over there, and you got the tools. On the other hand, you see that on the t-shirt, you've got this raccoon. Yes, it's a warning for you. Because the tools that have this raccoon icon on our website, do not open them in the production environment, please. So you remember that. And we always put it. It was there since forever in our team. And if you double click on the tool like this, it will destroy something for sure, because they were written to do it, only in the lab environment. The rest of the tools are fine, but these ones are not. Yeah, so just saying. Okay. Let's move on. Basically, this picture kind of reminds me one situation that we are dealing with within the infrastructures. And this is the situation that whenever, obviously, there is a hole somewhere being found and it's made public, everybody else is going to also dig into this hole. Yes, I'm talking about the situation when, for example, I'm not a fan of this word, but let's say hackers find out the situation that they can get access to information that you publish. It's a point of entry to your infrastructure, to your website, to anything like this. And we know a lot of cases, for example, LinkedIn a couple of years ago, passwords leaked. Okay, great. Everybody throw each other on that, because it's like a little bit, like you see on the picture, we want to get access to more information and more information. That's why from the hacker perspective, it's a little bit easier to function, because administrators got a very difficult job to do. And this is something that I call a real job. Administrators, they get a real job. Consultants, it's not a real job. Yes, I don't have a real job, for example. Yes, and I'm really like full of respect that, I mean, we have to take care about every single thing, getting these things up to date, these things patched, these things up to date. Think about people/users, as we call them. Yes, to do something about them. And for consultants/hacker, eventually, it's just like you dig in, and you're like, oh, there's a hole over there, and so on, and that's enough. Your job done. So technically, we have to do a hard job to do, and it'll be great to know what approach can we take in order to make our infrastructure secure. The first approach, which is, I would say, this is more like an inspiration for you. It's more like a vision, nothing technical right now. Monitoring DNS queries. The reason why I'm saying this is actually very simple. When you've got RevDNS, yes, question to you is, and I hope you're going to stay with me all the time. I know we are in the big room, so don't be shy in general. But who is responsible for RevDNS? Who manages RevDNS? So, for example, it's going to be easy. As I said, warm up, CMD. When we've got the situation NS lookup, let's say, and we do Microsoft.com, yes? And then I've got here the IP address, so let's say this 46, paste. I got GRV Microsoft.com, but if I take the mark one, this 221 thing, paste, I get a MicrosoftProductionStudios.org. What is this? Who is responsible for RevDNS? Answer is very simple. I know you know it. You're just shy. Just come on, guys. Like, it's a private session. Yes, relax. I'm here for you. Yeah, and I'm very serious. Torture me with questions. I actually like it. Yeah. So you need to leave this room knowing more. Yeah. So that's clear. And I'm trying to do my best to make it like this. So ask questions. But technically, what I'm saying is that obviously it's an owner of the domain, yes, of the certain IP address and so on, eventually, and of the domain. So if in our firewalls we are monitoring different kinds of communication over IP addresses, the reason why I'm saying this, because I see it at the customer sites, like what are the websites, or eventually what are the IP addresses that your users are communicating with? Could you please show me the printout from the traffic that you had yesterday? Yes, and what they gather are not domains, but the IP addresses. If you gather domains, that's great. Yes, but then question is, like, what stands behind that? So my point here with this monitoring DNS queries is that is there a possibility to manage the history of what people were asking for, so that later, when you see the IP address, like this one, for example, they weren't asking for microsoftproductionstudios.org. They were actually asking for microsoft.com, so that you know that they were actually asking for microsoft.com. Purpose, simple. Yes, different kinds of software that people use, including, for example, malware, that will communicate eventually with some domain, and you check what is this IP address, because you see on the firewall, you see the IP address, you check what's that, and then they say microsoft.com. So you're going to be like, no, okay, that's microsoft.com. It isn't, because who affects this? It's whoever owns that particular domain. Yes, and whoever manages the DNS of this domain. As I said, small inspiration. What is my point here? Well, question is what we're going to configure. Well, I do have here, well, this is our DNS server, and I got DNS Monitor Pro. It's actually a small solution that we wrote. For now, it's a proof of concept, maybe, and again, as an inspiration. Well, the name maybe isn't very catchy, DNS ETW Consumer. ETW, because it uses event tracing for Windows. Event trace for DNS, by the way, it's a big mess, and I'm not afraid to say it. If you try to write something on the top of it, it's super hard to script it. It's super hard to build something on top of it, because the events are very irregular. But regardless, so this particular consumer, before I start it, let me show you how the client is going to receive it. So this is my machine over here. And what I'm going to do, NSLookup, okay. And then microsoft.com, as you see. So if I take this, we already know this, but this is from the other machine, this one, it says microsoftproductionstudios.org. Okay, good. So I'm going to quit, ipconfig, flush DNS, and let's see what we can do about it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to start our consumer. And on the client side, I'm going to be asking for the same type of query. Yeah, so again, we're going to get to NSLookup, and I'm going to ask for microsoft.com. This is great. And I'm going to ask for the IP address that is here. One more time. Let me do it one more time. Microsoft.com. So we need to cache this answer. Oh. Does it work or not? Let's see. Because it's supposed to. This is on the DC. This is the blonde effect. I know in Sweden you got a lot of blondes, but maybe they are smarter. Okay, so NSLookup one more time. Yes, so microsoft.com. Very good. Let's see. I'm going to take this address one more time. Paste. Let's see. Oh, does it? Yeah, one more time. Let's ask for the domain. So we've got that. Now the IP address. This is not good. Okay, let's take the other one. Because my point here is to show you that we can implement the solution. Okay, that's better. That's better. So we got it cached for this IP address. That we are able to implement the solution. That effectively, when we actually ask for the certain IP address, it returns us, or to you, in your analysis, the domain that user asked before. So that you can see what were the domains that you can eventually block, not the IP addresses. Yes? That's my point over here. We can try the other one. Yeah, the other one doesn't work, apparently. But this one is. And if I take this IP address, and I put it in my local machine here, just to show you the difference. That's my purpose of this demonstration. We're going to bring it here. So this is 46. And on the left side, it returned microsoft.com, because that's what we've asked first. And here, it delivers, obviously, the real message of what this thing is. Yes. So managing the history of the DNS queries. So what about the next step? Well, sanitization of data. Who remembers something that was called a shell shock? Put your hands up. Okay, like 30% of you, 40%? Okay, good. Just a small explanation. So the shell shock in general, it was the attack that was related to that whenever we've got a router, and then we make a certain query, the router logs can interpret this query, and because they are written in a, and they are interpreting data in another correct way, they can execute whatever I was asking for as long as I'm able to put it in the log. Did you know that Windows is vulnerable to that? Yes? Let me show you how it works. And, of course, here comes a small conclusion at the end, that we should be a little bit better or monitoring data, sanitizing data. I would like to show you later on a bunch of examples, yes? In every language, every form that we've got, every script that we've got, there are different kinds of special characters. And sometimes in IT, what we see, that guys in IT, they just write the script and that's it. But they don't, for example, monitor how echo variable is used. So when you do echo something, is it dangerous or not? It is, actually. So I know it's a Microsoft conference, but I'm going to give you the solution too, yes? So let's have a look. A simple case. I'm going to do set, let's say, test equals cat. Yep, whatever, something simple. So this is, we all know how it works. If we do set test, it shows us test equals cat. And I've just set the variable test to be equal to cat. Very good. Now we're going to do echo, and then we're going to do echo test, so that you see the result expected. Yeah, everybody knows. It's very simple. Yeah, I know that. But this is the introduction so that everybody stays with me and we are on the same page in a moment. Yeah. So now next we're going to do set test equals cat, and then we're going to do ping local host. Yes? What's going to happen? It's not a like vicious question. It's an okay question. Yet. We're going to do this. Simple, yes? Nothing dangerous. Set the variable cat and ping localhost. Yes? Nothing unexpected. What should we do if I don't want that to happen? Because I want in variable test, I want to have a cat and ping localhost. I want that as a piece of text. Well, and, ampersand, it's the special character. So if you want to change it, yeah, we put the like roof, whatever, in front of it, and then it is going to be saved as a text. Yeah, so this is the easy part. So let's do it this way. And if I do set test, it's a piece of text that I want. Okay, now the bad part. What if I do echo test? It executes. You could be like, yeah, this is kind of obvious. It's not. Yes? Because echo cannot interpret something that was a text before. It treats it as something to execute. Yeah, so that's pretty much how it works. We have discovered that with another Russian guy and guys also, there was a separate team from Belgium some time ago, actually last year. And there's nothing going on with that. We could be like, yeah, but this could be like used in the only certain like trim situation. Yes and no. That depends how we process our data. For example, what I want to show you is the solution that we actually saw at our customer site. They were interpreting the logs. The situation works like this. Basically, well, I'm going to be on the side of the hacker here, and I'm going to listen on port, well, 666, whatever. I'm using here a CQ cat. It's a tool that you can download from our website. It's a netcat version that is not recognized by antivirus. Yeah, so that you can use it wherever you want. None of our tools, by the way, are recognized by antivirus, if you are interested. And I'm serious, try. Okay. But not the ones with raccoon, okay? We all know that. Very good. So what are we going to do? Well, simply speaking, on the server here, I got implemented, oh, not here, but on the server, I got implemented the solution that allows us to monitor the logs. As simple as this. Let me show you the whole thing. It is, well, as you see, the work folder, nothing special. In agents, I got task aborted because nothing happened yet. And I got a simple analyzer, analyze.bat. Let me actually enlarge it. And what we do, and this is this deadly thing, echo agent. And I'm going to pretty much, to the web server, make the query where I specify a malicious user agent. Yes, and echo will execute it. This is a simple rewrite of from the IIS logs. If I want to know, for example, from which browsers people enter my website. And in order to, for parsing, I'm using the log parser. One of my favorite tools, it's not our tool that we wrote, obviously, but log parser, it's an amazing tool that you can use to parse different kinds of logs. And I'm simply speaking, of course, you see the analyze.bat that we already checked out. And this log parser.cmd, we put the data into agents. And that's something that we parse later. And how does the parsing mechanism look like? And again, quite simple, edit. Yeah, and it's a simple log parser command where we are able to select, distinct, replace, string, and so on, and we are just sanitizing data. So we are actually doing that. But one thing is missing, of course, it's an echo. And echo is quite dangerous here. Okay, so how the whole solution is gonna work? Well, simply speaking, I'm gonna be here on the client side. The first thing that I'm gonna do, I'm gonna set up the listener. Yeah, so let's start to listen. And the second thing that I'm gonna do, it's gonna be, I'm gonna make a query. And that query, it's gonna be, let me bring it up. It's gonna look like this. And this particular query, it's my favorite way of changing the PowerShell into something that executes in one package. And it's an encoded command. Very often, when you got a remote shell during the hacking penetration testing process, you cannot work with this command as, I mean, if you would like to have the PowerShell, because PowerShell opens as a separate process. You can execute the blocks. And these blocks very nicely execute when you encode them. How do we encode them? Base64, not a big deal. But thanks to this, I'm going to have a one operation. And I will not have a separate window with the PowerShell running on it. I will just have it in one window. I mean, another option is to write a script, yes? But let's say this is the easiest addition. What is the whole thing about? Well, let me decode it first so that we are able, of course, to see how it works. And the whole decoding, let me execute it, does the following command. Invoke web request. I'm connecting, downloading the netcat, saving it as a netcat.exe, start process, saving it in the, running it from the netcat.exe from temp, and then I'm connecting back to the client. So client is a hacker. Netcat syntax, very easy. Okay, now why these things can run? Here comes another hardening part, which means should we enable the code to be executed on a server like this? Yeah, so I mean, Shellshock, it's nice for Windows, or Shellback, as we could call it, for Windows, but should we allow certain things to execute? Because we have to download certain software. Of course, this software, as I mentioned, it doesn't have to be recognized by antivirus, but should it ever execute? Exactly, probably not. So let me summarize it in a certain way, but first, let's have fun. So what I'm going to do is to make the wget query. That's it, not a big deal. So when we are here, I'm just going to paste it, and then simply speaking, enter. That's okay. 200 means okay. And in this case here, I'm waiting for the log to be processed. And what is happening in the back, I get a scheduled task that just runs one script, the analyze agents, the one that I showed you, and that's it. It runs this every minute. Also, IIS needs a little bit of time to buffer out the log to the text file, so it may take up to 2 minutes, something like that. But sooner or later, we will be able to get access to the remote shell on the server. Yes. So this is something that is pretty interesting here. Of course, just one comment. Yes, there are different kinds of tools that you can use and solutions in order to make sure that this kind of code doesn't execute on a server. Yes, if you are afraid of implementing AppLocker, which is amazing because it allows us to prevent code execution, then you've got also the possibility to monitor the servers. And there is a very nice solution. So I'm going to talk about it in a moment. It is called Sysmon. And Sysmon was version 3, was written by Mario Krasinovich, and it monitors you a lot of things, including whatever execute. Yeah? So this is this work folder, host name, on, and we are on the web server. Yeah? So as easy as this, antivirus will not say a word. Yes? So this is the echo variable. Make sure, my conclusion for that, make sure what do you echo and where. Yes? Because, and I says, as I said at the very beginning, things that we're going to talk about, they are not very obvious. Yes? GPO, great. Tips configured, this is easy. Yes? But things like this, they really make our infrastructure a little bit more secure. Because when you will have a pen test, somebody comes in, these are the things that we are looking for, not if you got a group policy setting configured or not. Yes? The other things, the cool things, the interpretations things, the scripts that you might have as a logon scripts in Active Directory, these kind of things. Yes? Okay, let's continue. Interesting so far? Okay, very good. Thanks so much. Okay, so this was the demonstration about the shell shock. Okay, next one. Active monitoring of our servers. What am I saying here? It's actually, and again, when we are sitting here, when you are like on a conference, you don't have to tell me, yes, but can we really say, like when I'm sitting here, do I know all of the processes that are executing on my server? And if answer is no, yes, then we have to do something about it, because there's going to be this one beautiful day, maybe not, I wish you not, but maybe it's going to be like this, that things can happen. And now, how are you going to trace that? We're going to be talking on the next my presentation, how to trace after attack traces, because there are a couple of things that we can do, but in general, it's not very easy. There is a prefetch, you can have a look and so on, but who started this process? Like with what kind of parameters this process was started? What was the IP address that we have communicated with? Yes, all those things. Very good. So what I want to show you is actually Sysmon, but not really how to implement it because it's so easy, but how much beauty we can put on the top of it. Our customers implement it actually in their infrastructure. They do this by themselves because it's so easy. And what's the benefit? Let's have a look. So I'm going to get into the note 2 that I've got in here. This is my note 2. Very good. And on the note 2, I have implemented Sysmon. That's good. Full screen. Now, how Sysmon works? Couple of things. Well, first of all, it works as a service. And underneath, there is a driver that collects information about what kind of stuff is running in the operating system, but sincerely, there isn't anything that is much more detailed than Sysmon. It uses something that operating system provides, which is ETW, event tracing for Windows, and we are able to read the events in the event log. There is a special log. It is called Sysmon Operational, and I can spot here a lot of different things that are happening in my computer. For example, and this is lovely, if you got a situation that something is trying to communicate over the network, you see that there is this communication that happened, you got a process identifier, you've got who wants to communicate, and you've got also the IP addresses from where to where we were trying to communicate. Just a small enlargement, yes? So if, for example, you guys had Cryptolocker or anything like this, and you are trying to investigate the post-incident situation, Sysmon will be great, because you check out the Sysmon log and you're like, oh, okay, so this was this process, we have to find out if there's anything more like this, and it was communicating with this IP address. Very useful. By the way, additionally, I have to mention one thing. I mean, it's very easy, so check by yourself. We have actually written a tool. It's called, not this one, the network monitor. Let me bring it up. I'm gonna go to the desktop and let me search for it quickly. This was the CQ network tool, log analyzer, and let me bring it up. Sorry about that. Let me just bring it up like this, because I thought that I've got it in machine, but apparently I don't. Let me bring it up. It should be CQ Sysmon, like this. Yeah, lovely. CQ Sysmon Net Analyzer. Yes, that's the one. The tool is actually very straightforward and simple, because what it does, it allows you to analyze the Sysmon, and it's actually very easy. You put the dir in and dir out, all of the different kinds of processes that were used by Sysmon to that were used in general in operating system that were used to communicate with the certain IP addresses. So you have the list of processes and IP addresses, and that's it. And you see this communicating with this, this communicated with that. Every single process. User use Internet Explorer to browse websites. Which websites? You're going to know. Yes? So this is the case. But my point was actually a bit different here, because I want to show you one thing that we are able to achieve, and it looks like this. That's the one. Okay, here we go. So this graph here, I'm going to generate it in a second, is the one that we wrote a tool like this, that on the top of the Sysmon logs, if you want to see what was the history of execution of the certain files on this server after it rebooted, you generate this beautiful log. I mean, seriously, it can be a great wallpaper. Yes, or I mean, I bet you can paint things like here, stick on them, because there's going to be thousands of things if you don't reboot your server. But it's going to paint the graph on it, and you're going to see the oldest things that happened, yes, in operating system, who started what. So for example, I got from explorer.exe administrator, it starts the PowerShell. Or from cmd.exe, we actually started the Sysmon ETW events consumer, which I'm going to start in a moment, yes? So these are the things that we can get on the top of it. Sysmon can be nice. Now, whenever we are thinking about all those tools, let me show you one thing. I got here, well, Sysmon graphs. And this is this Sysmon log analyzer. Version 2. It's available on our website. We share it for free. And what it does on the top of the logs, it creates the graphs. Yeah, so it takes a moment, because it depends how big is your system, how many processes you had, how many things happened. And in my case, it's a lot of things, because I did not reboot my server for a long time. And we've got here this file that I was mentioning. We convert it to the PDF, and then we got it. Yes, so I'm happy to share it. I'm actually sharing it so you can have a look. Okay, another tool on the top of Sysmon, and this is something that we like to work with when I'm working, for example, I have this executed, is the one that allows you to inform you, because Sysmon by default, it doesn't have it. The one that allows you to inform you if there is something that is executed that you don't trust. And now question is, what does it mean that we trust or we don't trust? Well, small thing. In the toolkit, we wrote also a tool that works faster than PowerShell. It's called Fill Hashes. It calculates the hashes for every executable in your operating system, just like this. And it creates you the file. It's called hashes.txt. Yes, well, just to give you an idea, Fill Hashes, C, and we got it, yeah? So we analyze all C drive, of course, and then we verify like different kinds of signatures of the different kinds of executables, yes? Now my system is a bit busy. Normally it works a little bit faster. So we calculate that. Okay, I'm gonna interrupt it. Based on that, you can always run yourself a monitor. This is the Sysmon ETW events consumer. I'm also sharing this, and it reads the hashes.txt from the parent folder, and whenever there is something that executes that you don't know, you're going to be notified like this, because Sysmon doesn't have it. And again, how does it work? Well, it's that kind of shows activity in the operating system. Processes, they don't start like that, yes? If I do start, for example, cmd.exe, yes, then I'm going to get this information here. So as you see, we actually we have started cmd.exe as who, as an administrator, yes? And then we've got the MD5, and we see what was the parent process. So it's amazing, because here, and also on our graph, we can see the situation that whenever you've got a malware, and you've got a process, and it started another 10 processes, and then the process at the end, but these 10 are closed, terminated, who started this thing here? Well, this guy here, but we have no path, yes? In Sysmon, with our graph, you do. And you are able to see exactly that this threat comes from there. Implementation of Sysmon makes so much sense. Here, what started is actually this scheduled task, from the previous demonstration that runs. This is this decoded encoded command, as you see. That's the one that was decoded, and we managed to connect to the other computer. Yeah, so this is not trusted, because I have no idea what netcat is. I've never trusted that, but it executed, so that's why it's in red. Maybe it's not the most lucky color, like when you look at this, it's not very bright, but it shows you that something dangerous happened. Very well, let's move on. So, the web server environment, what does it mean? Well, these kind of things, like code execution prevention, or at least monitoring for the different kinds of processes, they should go on the anything that goes, that is like a DMZ and so on. How do we know that? Why do we say it this way? Why do I say it this way? Because whenever, for example, we do the pen test for the website, many different things can happen. And they happen, well, why? Because of the logic that is messed up in the application, but effectively I want to get inside. I want to execute things. So if execution of the code was controlled in DMZ, not many attacks will be successful. Yes, at least in a DMZ. And there's one thing that I always say that we are kind of like laughing at that a little bit, quite ironically. Some of our customers that we talk, and we try to, for example, technically advertise our services, we are like, hey, what about the internal pen test? And they're like, no, we don't need it. We did the, this is my favorite, vulnerability scanning. And we're like, didn't you know that the biggest vulnerability is actually misconfiguration? Not the vulnerability itself? Because there are so many vulnerabilities in the world. Sure, but what if we patch them? They are not vulnerabilities anymore, but misconfiguration stays. Yes? So that's what I'm talking about. Preventing things, and in general, reviewing things, it's the definitely keys to success here. You're going to get this slide deck later on. Here you've got the list of things that we suggest. What should you do in order to make your web server more secure? But what I want to show you regarding this is actually the situation that was really nice some time ago. Let me dig in here. Running, let me open this window. No. I have this window, it's legal, but I did not activate it. That's why you see the message like this. Okay. Last year, there was a vulnerability. And I'm saying this because we could be like, yeah, we're all up to date. Lovely. I am just back from US. And I was doing the pen test. Can you believe it was so funny? That, it's not nice to laugh, but when you check out the history of the updates, yes, question is, how does it look like? Is it regular? In most cases, no. They have actually installed updates before I came. At least this. Yeah, I was quite happy. Thanks so much for actually doing this. Because the previous updates were in 2013. Yes, and I'm like, do you guys install updates? Yeah, we do. Well, that's what they say. And I'm like, yeah, what about this situation? Yeah, we decided kind of to do it. Like, kind of why? If you were not doing this for the past 2 years, yes? So there was an attack. It was called Hurricane Panda. And, attacked the vulnerability. In 2014, at the end of the year, this is not Panda, but our developer is kind of messed up. And basically, when I asked him for the picture, could you please bring me a picture of Panda to this application? And he's like, I don't know how Panda looks like. Bring yourself your own picture. I'm like, come on, just bring the picture, yes? So he brought the picture. And apparently, he never saw Panda in his life. Poor developer. Okay. So what's my point? I've started an application. This application is running as an application pool. As we know, application pool in IIS is very not privileged. It's actually completely not privileged. I want to show you two things here. One, code execution, again, prevention, MET, could help us out a little bit here too. But Miss Selenius, run as this user. This is in Process Hacker. Hacker, again, it's not a very fortunate name. It could be called Process, Watcher, yes? But we don't hack anything. Nothing is happening here. I'm just using the privilege that I have anyway. It's the impersonation into someone's token. I'm taking someone's token. Why? Because I can. And don't get me wrong, I'm always laughing when you see the YouTube and you've got this hacking videos with the techno music running, yes? And sometimes they're like, and now we're gonna take over. You see, administrator is logged on. Let's take this token. It's so cool. No. It's a privilege. It's normal. Well, if it's normal, we could discuss, but it is actually built in, planned, and so on. So I'm gonna impersonate into this account. Yeah, so cmd.exe, and I'm impersonating into Panda. Yeah, so whoever that is. Okay, good. So let me enlarge the font maybe, because I'm gonna do it very quickly, but I cannot do it before, because it's a session like this, so now we're all set. Very good. Now, net user, let's say Sweden, yes, password, add. This is just to show you that I cannot do much, yes? And who am I? I'm the Panda. Very good. So, can I escalate myself into illegal way in Windows? And if this is the case for vulnerability, that's gonna be cool. But it's not normal, and if we're all patched, and if we prevent code like this, it was a zero-day vulnerability, then we are all set. So, let's begin. Panda, and then we've got win64.exe, cmd.exe. I'm gonna use the vulnerability in win32k.sys. Quite a cool one. And then I'm the local system. Yes? So is this normal? No. Is Windows vulnerable? No. When it's patched, it isn't. Yes? That's the thing. So that's what we are always saying. We shouldn't be worried really about things like this as long as we care about updates. We should be worried about what executes, because antivirus will not help you. Yes? And that's my conclusion here. Code execution prevention, not only on the servers, also on the clients, but that's in general the idea. Okay, now, centralizing the logs. Exactly, because logs can be modified. On my next presentation, I will show you something that it took us actually 6 months to write it. It's a tool to modify EVTX files, but is it possible to violate the logs that easily? No, it isn't actually, but what can happen is that they can be wiped. So someone gets in, I wipe the logs, I wipe the Sysmon logs. Yeah, that's what I can do. So anything that is related with the log centralization makes sense. Can regular user wipe the logs? Well, user cannot, but user can cause the flooding with the events so that it overrides your almost 65 megabytes of the circular log in the event log, and then you will see nothing. That's why streaming them out makes sense. If you've got the solutions that are gathering logs in one place, lovely. If you don't, think about them, because obviously we will be centrally informed what is happening, especially we can utilize very nicely Sysmon that I was talking about before. And there are a lot of solutions that are good. Sometimes you have to pay for them, sometimes they are free, but that's pretty much what I want to mention here. Top 47 log management tools. Yeah, if you search for that in the appropriate browser, you're gonna find out information about the suggestions for what exists in the world. Yeah, and Gartner has a really nice summary too. Yes, if we are talking about the serious solutions, serious game players. Yes, how that situation can look like? Well, simply speaking. Yes, let's dig in and let's have a look at the whole scenario. So I'm going to use again our Node 2 server one more time. Okay, that's the one. And here on the desktop, just to give you a clue, yes, this is actually attacking Sysmon, yes? 4, and you've got obviously the series of events. In my case, it's actually a small amount, get child item, and then I'm getting the flooded.txt creation time, get date, yes? And that's it. So I'm modifying here, so this is this flooded.txt, I'm modifying here pretty much the log. And I'm like trying to get access to the certain file. If I execute it, we'll run it with the PowerShell, yes, as whoever, in Sysmon, I will be able to see, so we can refresh the logs, because there are plenty of those, we're able to see that there has been something, and as you see, this is 2222, logs has been flooded, a small portion, yes, because we don't want to kill it, but these events are the ones that were actually, as you see, file creation time changed. And let's do it for the next 65 megabytes. Yes, and as simple as this. It's any event like this can be generated to flood our logs. So if we configured some kind of subscription here, in case of Sysmon, it's actually quite tricky, but it's not too bad. So we can have a subscription, for example, somewhere here in the logs. Let's see what we got here. This is the this machine. I need to get to our DC, which is in here. In the event log, yes, we can subscribe to the different kinds of events. Yes, and we've got here. Let me get to Windows log. Forwarded events. Sorry, subscription. Nope, not this server. Oh, sorry, my mistake. Here we go. Node 2, one more time. Forwarded events. No. Ah, sure. Doom, full screen mode. Let's do it this way. Yeah, and we've got forwarded events. And then we are able to see, of course, all the different events that are coming from the certain machine, yes? And these machines, these events are actually coming from Node 2, yes? As simple as this. And I got here Sysmon subscription. I just want to show you one thing, that in this particular case, of course, the settings are quite obvious, yes? If we go to the events to collect Sysmon as anything else that comes from outside of Microsoft, Sysmon is Microsoft, but it's from the outside of Windows, we have to configure it this way. So it has to be configured manually so that we are able to gather all of the events like this. Yeah? So we have to do this a little bit of XPath form to build it like this so that you are able to gather all of the logs. Yeah? And then you specify which event IDs you would like to get. Or you use the other system. You don't have to use the subscription by Microsoft. Just to give you a little bit of inspiration that you may actually build up one box that's going to gather them all. And then even if someone deletes the log, who cares? All the stuff already went to the other server. Of course, the other server can be attacked too. Yes, it's another story. But that's one of the helpers, so to say. Okay, guys, let's move forward. Another thing, it's the code execution prevention. And this is just to mention, of course, within the code execution prevention, we've got the device guard, we've got AppLocker, software restriction policies, and Emmet. These are the four solutions that can help us out a little bit. What about the device guard, yes? Device guard is actually quite nice because it is available in Windows 10 Enterprise. And implementation of that requires, of course, secure boot to be there in Windows, in a BIOS. So you have to make sure that this is enabled. But there is actually a very nice setup that you can use for yourself in order to implement it. If device guard, by the way, relies on the signatures of the files, and we could be like, yeah, but does it mean that I have to sign thousands of files in the infrastructure? It doesn't mean that. It means, though, that it's enough so that you scan them, and the ones that you don't have signed, you're going to get them signed. But using the catalog file. How does it work? Let me bring it up. So I got here Windows 10. And I have a little bit of script already ready. There is a tool, it's called Package Inspector. And Package Inspector, it's nice, because it allows you to monitor what is happening when you build up so-called a golden image. Yeah, let me show you the whole thing. I'm gonna start the Package Inspector. Lovely. And right now, I can install the software that is not digitally signed. As you see, this is Kine, for example. And to implement that, right now, let's just do next. Very good. Okay, finish. And, well, don't install, we don't care. So Package Inspector monitored that event. And this is lovely, because things were not digitally signed. Okay, what next? Well, we can stop it, and I'm gonna save. Let me move myself to the different path, maybe. Okay. And I'm going to go to Tools. We can stop it. And we're going to build on the top of what we've got, the catalog file. And that catalog file shows us all the different kinds of hashes of files that were there. They were not digitally signed. And in Kine, it was everything. So let's do that. We've stopped it. Now, what is this CDF file? Oh, let me show you. Notepad. CQ tools, not cut but the CDF, and CDF file contains the paths to all of the files that will be in the catalog file. So for example, DLLs, executables, and so on. Yeah? So as you see, these things were not signed, they will be on my list. Now, the next part that comes to place is the signing. So catalog file needs to be signed. And in my case, well, I do have here the script. It is the secure integrity. I actually put it in tools. And this is the PFX, so it contains the private key. And I'm going to sign in tools folder the CQ tools catalog file. And then this catalog file, you trust. I mean, you trust the signer. OK, here we go. It was that. Okay, this is actually quite. Okay. The spelling. No, let me do it this way. Yep, CMD. Whatever the reason was, let's make it work. Okay, and here we go. And we need to specify the password. What? No. Let me do it this way. Strange. Okay. So we've got it signed. And our CQ tools catalog file, yes, it's going to take a small moment when it opens. Well, it's here, and it is digitally signed. That's how you can sign your apps. That's one of the solutions. And in the device guard, when you turn on in group policy, which is literally one checkbox, then all of the things that you trusted that are protected by the catalog file, then those can you can run in your infrastructure. The other ones are forbidden. Actually, I think that if there is something from Microsoft that lately came out that is cool, it's this. I was dreaming about it for my whole childhood. Yes? Okay, let's go. Yeah, almost to the end. Malicious file review, yes? What do I mean by this? It's the review of the files that are being sent to people, especially not really long time ago, the Adobe and the Flash vulnerability. Have you heard about that? Yeah, it's a big one, yes? The first thing that Adobe said is uninstall Flash. Everybody was like, what? Internet without Flash? How could it be? Yes? Right now, it's actually quite serious. They are working on a solution. But my point is that when you receive some files or when your employees receive some files, we are kind of learned that there can be a macro in the document. Yes, we know that. But what about the PDFs and the JavaScript? Do we know how to monitor PDFs? And I can tell you one thing, and it's kind of my personal opinion, that if it's about the PDF format, I really think it came to Earth from hell, because however it's designed, it's such a mess. Like, I'm going to put JavaScript there, or there, or there. And you're like, any logic? So that I can write a tool so that it can extract me the stuff? No. That's why, by the way, the only logic that we've got and the only tool that we've got is actually Python. And let me go to Python and let's learn how to analyze the stuff. Didier, it's the name of the toolkit. Didier. And how can we analyze those PDFs? Well, I have here a PDF, this one. It has no extension. That's for me, just in case I don't click on it or something. It is actually exploiting the vulnerability CVE-2010-2883. It doesn't matter. What matters is that it contains JavaScript, and I want to know what kind of JavaScript is this. So in order to test it, I need to use Python, and for that, I'm going to use the PDF. Let me move it to the top. PDF parser. PDF parser. I'm going to parse this file, and I want to search dash dash search equals JavaScript. And that's it. And if the result is anything, it means that you have it. Anything. If the result is empty, you don't have it. If it's anything, you have it. This is actually a bit messed up, because there's a lot of sections when the JavaScript is there. But let me show you how it works, yes? So we're going to pretty much do the PDF parser again, but instead of search JavaScript, I'm going to use minus O and the name of the section. Let's say 23. Okay, let's do it. 23. And then minus F with the basic filter. See how simple that is. And enter. And this tiny ugly stuff that came out, it's a part of the malicious script that was in this PDF. But it's actually spread across many, 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 many different sections. They refer to each other. So we will need to analyze it. It's going to take probably 2 hours to get into the whole sections and put them all together. But there is no reason why someone should put the JavaScript into the PDF that it sent to you. JavaScript executes on our computer. So why someone wants something to be executed on your computer? Pointless, right? So hopefully this tiny tip makes it easier for us to analyze whatever is sent to people in the form of the PDF, for example. Because Adobe, they issue an update like every day, yes? I'm ironic, I know. This is cruel, but unfortunately, it's a little bit like that. Okay, so that was the case. Nice. At the end, data caching. What about the cache credentials, yes? Are they safe or not? Well, I can tell you right now that they are quite safe. And how to prove it? Well, simply speaking, what we're going to do, we're going to take the operating system and we're going to overwrite cache credentials, and I'm going to show you if I do that, if I steal them in a way, am I able to read someone's secrets or not? And on my next session, I would like to show you a little bit of forensics that domain admin can do in order to steal your private data. And I'm very serious about it. It's just serious with a capital S, yes? Let's have a look at the cache credentials. Very good. So I got this Windows 10 here. Here we go, Windows 10, that we used in a moment ago. Now, just to show you two things. First of all, let me show you the, here comes the user that is logged on. It's Freddy Krueger. It's the user that I use for different purposes. This time Freddy is good, but he did not do a good thing. He saved his password in a Google Chrome. And I know it's a long story. It's like, what is better, Android, iPhone, or Windows Phone? Like, yeah, sure, let's discuss, yeah? It's the same. Though I have a little bit of my personal opinion about Google Chrome, because it does not leverage the data protection API correctly. And I'm technical right now. It's not if I like it or don't, but it's technical. Anyway, Freddy saved the data there. It's a LinkedIn password to LinkedIn. Good. Now, Freddy will log on to Windows. Let's do it this way. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to lock the desktop. Why? Because I want to show you Freddy's password, OK? Password. That's what the Freddy's password is. You see? Capital P at SSW0RD. Enter. Works. OK? So now what we're going to do, we will reboot. So in this area, I'm going to say power restart. And I'm going to boot this machine from the removable media, yes, ISO image. Doesn't matter, offline access. I mean, BitLocker is obviously a protection. It doesn't matter. I could do it online too. I just want to show you another perspective, yes? So the only way and reason why I can do that and boot from the ISO image and do something is because the disk is not protected. What we see at our customer sites is that they protect laptops, that's great, but they don't protect the local PCs. Why not? The same problem appears. What if the employee is bad? Okay, let's move on. Next, repair your computer. We'll definitely repair it. Troubleshoot, advanced options, command prompt. And now, font up, tunk, tunk, so that everybody can see. Lovely. I'm going to go to my toolkit. And what we have here, it's the Kiwi Secure Edition. It's the famous Mimikatz that you all know. We actually have a privilege to cooperate with Benjamin, and our team has our own versions of Mimikatz, and they're not recognized by antivirus. Just saying. Be nice with them, okay? Because it might not be ethical in general. Don't put yourself in trouble, but you're going to find Mimikatz folder on our tools website. If you get there, you're going to get your version of Mimikatz that is not recognized by antivirus, okay? Okay, so just saying, as you see, the Mimikatz that is not recognized by antivirus has this logo because we normally use it for our job. So what I'm going to do, LSA dump, cache, we're almost done, and I'm gonna change and override cache credentials that are stored very safely in registry. Cache credentials are, simply speaking, we call them MSDC2. This is your username, your password's hash, technically NTHash. In Windows, we use MD4, not 5, as a lot of people say. On the top of that, we calculate hash, and this value, so like a double hashed value, it's a part of a function that creates a value that is in the registry. It is brute forceable, but you need a hell lot of time to do it. So the way how we save it, it's safe. But because we know the algorithm, we are able to override them. So let me override them. Yes, I don't care like what kind of passwords you've got, I'm gonna set mine. That's what I'm gonna do. So Windows, system32, config, system, and D, there is no tab, I cannot use it. Windows, system32, config, security. Yes, so this is the security, we've got it. And a switch, very important, Kiwi, that will actually reset, very nice, password for Freddy Krueger. Yes, so let's dig in, and this is the last thing to show you. Continue, we are done. Let's see if we will be able to change that. In order to simulate cache credentials, I'm gonna change the interface to be not connected, actually on all of the interfaces, because I got a lot of stuff happening here. Very good. And Freddy will simulate right now, we're gonna simulate Mimikatz. You see the password is Mimikatz, different. Yes, let's log on. And that works. Yes, the question is, well, it doesn't yet, but I'm kind of sure it's gonna be fine. And now question is, okay, what now? Am I screwed? Is there a chance that someone can know my passwords? Well, by default, no. If you're a domain admin, I'm sure that you may not know, because we have discovered that in the domain controller, there is a hidden certificate issued by no one, issued to no one, valid only for 1 year, but still used, doesn't matter how your domain is, when it was created, that is used, by the way, to encrypt all of the people's passwords, Facebook, LinkedIn, so all the secrets that you store by using Data Protection API. And this certificate, when you got it, you can decrypt everybody's passwords in the enterprise. Really serious. If it's another reason why, like, sometimes we say, yeah, but domain admin can do everything. What doesn't mean everything? Well, everything means this too. These people can know your passwords. Or if you are the domain admin, you're in a very good position. But if someone becomes domain admin, this is very bad, because you can really ruin people's lives. And I'm going to talk about it within the next session. Have a look. This long waiting thing, it means that I do not have the key. We call it a key container, because it doesn't have an official name, that will allow me to decrypt whatever is stored over there, because Data Protection API relies on the user password. Yes, and in order to have this working, I need to know the user's password, or I need to get the certificate from the domain. And that's our next subject, but as you see, Freddy, in a moment, it takes some time, we'll be able to see that we are not actually able to get the Freddy's passwords, because decryption is pretty much impossible. Wow, that takes a long time. We are trying hard. Okay, so let's bring it up. I can show you one thing, AppData. In the meantime, Microsoft Windows, Microsoft Protect. And in this folder with the user SID, yes, these things, these are the keys that are used to protect the keys that encrypt our data. And this BKey secure, it's a secure, it's my domain name inside my environment. It's the public key of the domain that is used to encrypt your secrets. So whoever possesses the private key can get this access. When we have a look at the Freddy's password, even though I am able to change the cache credentials, that doesn't give me access to people's secrets. I cannot get access to the domain, this is obvious. So if you ever wondered, should we cache credentials or not? technically it doesn't matter. It only leaves the possibility for someone to get in access to your profile. That's it. Yeah, so if you have something that is decryptable without data protection API being engaged, these people will be able to get access to this data. Yes, but your secrets are actually safe. Very good. So, we got it. Sum up, network-oriented approach. We discussed the network queries. We discussed the data sanitization. We discussed the SysMoon. We discussed also a different approach to the web server code execution prevention techniques. We have discussed also data caching, log centralization. So there is a plenty of things that we can implement to make our infrastructure secure. The top 10 GPO list you're going to find in the internet. Yes, let's don't get too easy. But in general, when we are thinking about what is the hot thing right now to implement, it's definitely the pasty hash prevention. Yeah, so in general, we've got LAPS, local admin password management solution to be implemented, supported by Microsoft, official prevention technique for the pasty hash, and also any other things like monitoring and code execution prevention. Yeah, so these things are the hot ones. I would say if it's the most important thing, code execution prevention is the number one, because this is the thing that allows to do our job. That's it. And we want to be on the safe side. But as long as code execution is not implemented, hackers can still execute the code that for sure will not be recognized by antivirus, because why it should be? Rewrite the code today. Yes, your antivirus doesn't know it. Hopefully it was enjoyable and interesting, and hopefully you will not move anywhere besides the coffee break. You're going to go back, and now we are doing the hardcore that we all love, because we're going to dig into the forensics subject. Thank you so much, guys.